Hello, this is Informer, a show that reveals the latest ideas from artists, thinkers, and technologists. Informer invites you behind the screen to meet the people sketching, hacking, and imagining the next versions of our world. I'm Roddy Schrock, your host, and in each episode, I spotlight creative minds grappling with a changing world through art, technology, or often both. And I hope you'll subscribe to this podcast at informerpodcast.com, where you can also find show notes, links, and more information on all of the artists and projects that we discuss. In this episode, recorded early June 2020, Stephanie Dinkins shared an in-depth recounting of the remarkable trajectory of her career to becoming one of the leading artists bearing witness to the challenges posed by emerging AI. Through an extended biographical opening, she speaks about always being on the edge of technology, while becoming disillusioned with careers in publishing and advertising, as well as navigating a world which wants to overlay its own narratives on her as a person and as a practitioner. Stephanie's story speaks to anyone who has worked or is working on finding their way as an artist in a world under capitalism. And she really lays out clearly the inherent limitations in trying to improve technology's development by imbuing it with so-called values. I find Stephanie's work to be incisive and playful in the way that it gets to the impacts of AI. And underlying all of her work is a very welcome optimism, particularly at this time when there's a tendency towards a dystopic imagination. This episode starts with Stephanie recounting her childhood in Tottenville, New York, the southernmost tip of New York City.
My grandmother had a practice of gardening, and she had a big kind of garden that was on this corner, and it was kind of public. And again, and looking back, I see it as her public practice, her social practice. And so I really think my art practice is built on her way of working in the world in terms of her garden, which she would never call an art practice, right? And like never, right? Technology has always been in some weird way a piece of my life, and the desire to take things apart and hopefully get them back together has always been a piece of my life. Like I distinctly remember changing the brakes on my first car. Right? Like getting the book, pulling the car in the backyard and going, well, if this guy can do it, of course I can do it. I think I can handle that. You know, I used to work in publishing too. But there was a point in publishing when the LA riots happened. And people were still thinking about putting out a book as something hyper important. And yeah, there were just a lot of things that came together that pushed me out of that and sent me to Central America with my camera and trying to make a portfolio and then trying to get back into photography and going to photo school. And then, you know, I went to ICP, which is interesting because it's kind of a hard photo school, and I was there making video before lots of people were making video and making weird sculptures from trees. So like I was just making kind of weird things in this photo space. So it was always me trying to expand out the observation into different forms of legibility, I guess.
Maybe it would be helpful if you could talk a little bit about particularly your focus on machine learning.
Right. The machine learning is hyper interesting in that it is so large and so encompassing. It's a space that I can hang out in for a very long time and might require that, right? It's not like shifting and then gone, but it feels like a space that shifts and gets better and deeper. Like it embeds itself more deeply into who we are as people. So for me, that kind of says, oh, I'm going to be here for a long time.
Yeah, right. It's not going away anytime soon.
And it's only going to get deeper and more crucial to kind of think about, or my community's relationship to it. And it's funny, Roddy, because the more I think about it and I think about the way this has kind of rolled out for me, from me to the people I live near to, you know, technologists, like it just seems to keep spanning out. Like if we're really looking at this and thinking about the trajectory, like the whole middle class is in such danger. And I don't know that we understand as a class of folks, like what's coming at us. And so for me, that's the ball that keeps rolling, and the thought around it is really, really interesting and fun to start thinking about how we manage all of this and how we get ready for it. This moment now, even, right? It's like about huge shifts in the way that we operate, some of which won't go away, some of which, even though we think they won't, will. Like a little knock on the door saying, hey, there's some stuff coming down the pipe that we really need to be paying attention to. And I feel like we're being asked to actually not pay too much attention to it.
One of the things that I'm hearing from artists that are engaging in technology in maybe adjacent ways that you are, is getting to maybe a little bit of the point that you're making around the necessity to really just help people begin to grasp the kind of immensity of scale in what is coming down the pike, as you said, in terms of machine learning and its impact. And I wonder if you could maybe dig in a little bit to both what you see as being like the real threats that you are foreseeing, and what are some ways in which your work is helping people understand that? How are the ways that we can understand these threats and really try to avoid some of the worst case scenarios that seem somewhat likely right now?
Yeah, that's such an interesting question, because in a way, Roddy, I say that, or I think that I have no real idea of what the implications are. Like, I've come to think of artificial intelligence as these ecosystems that are being laid out, right? And these ecosystems of control in lots of places, of care in other places, but definitely ecosystems and multiple ecosystems that will touch our lives in more and more intimate ways and more consequential ways. And then I think about, well, who's making all of these technologies? And, you know, I would love to think that, yeah, you know, it doesn't matter who makes the technology, but we know that we have blind spots and we are not really capable of seeing that far beyond our own interests, sadly, in many cases, even when that is the central idea of what we're doing. You know, we gather in groups that are similar or of constituencies of the same peoples. Like, I can't tell you how many times I'm in the room with the same set of people who are thinking around the same things now. And I feel like that's really dangerous, because even we who are trying to do good in lots of ways have blind spots or have things that we just don't understand or don't have access to. And so for me, that says, oh no, like there's some way in which we have to make this, the process, or at least what's happening, more transparent so people are thinking about it, and then start enticing people into the idea that, yes, there's possibility for you to influence these systems now while they are kind of fluid. And really, we need you to be doing that. Otherwise, we're going to go more and more tunnel vision into a view of who belongs where, why they belong there, and how we keep them in the space that they belong to. And if you think about surveillance, like surveillance, right? Just being watched, or your data being collected to see what you do. If someone wants to shut you out of certain parts of the ecosystem, it gets easier and easier to do so if it's automated, right? And so how do you start to bring other views to say, or counteract what's going on there? How do we bring people in? And that becomes like bottom line for me. Like, we can't do this to ourselves. Just watching the news in the past few days, you know, says that we have so far to go just in general before we put all these ideas or our beliefs or values into systems that have more and more control. So how do we start to deal with them? And really what I'm saying is, how do we start to deal with a lot of our historic stuff so that we can actually get to the bottom of it? You know, I'm super fascinated by the Central Park dog walker and the bird watcher. Like, it's so fascinating. Hey, those are technologies. Like, the technology of having cameras in our pockets these days, to some extent protects us, to some extent lets us make things visible that weren't before. But it's interesting to me that they're both named Cooper, and that her family could have possibly owned his family at some point. And, you know, that, like, there's this cycle that you could go straight back to Antebellum South and come right to Central Park. And that's all the space in between, and Central Park in 2020, and all the space in between is space that we haven't dealt with. And we try, like, we refuse to deal with it, which is why I'm interested in the idea that perhaps if we get the middle on the middle class more engaged in this, we see all of our stakes in it versus seeing it as this group's problem or that group's problem. And maybe we start to deal on different levels. I don't know. Technology or machine learning has been really great in giving citizens who engage it, right? So if we say cameras and video cameras, like we have these cameras, we can engage them and use them as weapons against oppression in certain ways. With machine learning and databases, we can start to look at least at the data that we're basing things on. Like, if we don't know what the black box is doing, at least we can start to think about, well, what is the data that we're using and how can we kind of pull up some of the deficiencies and make them readily apparent? Like, it's interesting because I have a fight with data because in some ways, you know, people use data to validate everything, which means if you can't use data to validate it, then it's not true. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have that kind of learning or access to that information or the ways to collect and offer that back out, you have a deficiency of being able to fight the fight. But at the same time, data can also be used to say, hey, look, we can show you directly that these communities are not getting served in the ways that the community two blocks away is. Mm-hmm. And why is that? Mm-hmm. So there's this kind of set of power and disempowerment in it, especially if we leave it based on, like, systems that we're currently working on, like how we educate people and what we tell them is important. For me, it's like, where do we find the balance of how technology brings things to surface without letting it be the be-all, end-all and overriding ideas and intuition, right? And other ways of knowing that are equally valid in my, like, someone's intuition about something, or a story, right? A narrative, and especially the accumulation of narratives, has weight just as numbers, like hard data, can. But often now, like, I hear things getting, or ideas getting truncated by data. And that also scares me, right? So I don't know, I'm trying to figure out how we make the technology or how we make the new smart technologies, or how we ask that they have enough balance in them to recognize those things. And if they are eventually self-organizing, how do we imbue in them the idea that, you know, things like ethics and fairness are a core part of the way they think about things, and that we're not skewing them to one side or the other. You know, I've been in rooms where people are talking about, like, things like values, and it's so interesting because I hesitate when it comes to values, although I do think, like, values and ethos too, because people are starting to use values or weaponize the idea of values. Whose values go into these systems becomes important. Mm-hmm. But usually it sounds as if they're not saying that we need to do a kind of broad look at what our values are as a human society, or even as a society of sentient beings, and then try to parse that. But they're saying, oh no, our liberal values are the values that need to win, Or our conservative values are the values that need to win. It's like, oh, no. Oh, is this really what we're trying to do? Like, you're saying the technology is capable of so much more than that, but then you just want to use it to replicate what we have and what we've done.
Stephanie, I really appreciate you diving into this as deeply as you are, because I think it's really helping me see your work in light of your aims towards advocacy for like broad societal change, like in a much bigger way. And could you talk a little bit about like what the role of art is for you in that? And like, what is it about art that you see as being perhaps one of the movers that can kind of wedge loose these hugely seemingly intractable, just like social issues? And where is that intersection for you?
Yeah, you know, it's all getting so mixed up these days. But when I think of like the role, I'm like, oh, okay. So people have told me, oh, you should run for office. I'm like, no, I don't think I'm going to work very well in that kind of constrained situation. It, as an artist, it's so interesting because A, I get to put thoughts in the world in ways that suit my thinking, right? So I'm not a writer at all. It, like, writing is so super painful for me. But I can present ideas in a different format that allows people to digest them and think about them. And I also think that artists becomes the place where people are not expected to be pushed in a way to think about these things. So there's something nice about being able to walk into a variety, and I mean a broad variety of spaces under the title artist. You know, a community center here in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. It might be the stage of a major AI conference at Stanford. And have people kind of look at me a little bit skeptically, and then have them take you seriously enough to have conversations with you and see that you are pushing them a bit. And it's a bit, right? Like, I think it's incremental. I don't think I'm doing anything. But I know that there's something being pushed. And I think that that kind of pushing from directions that are unexpected is really important. You know, and artists also, like, we tend to go and lay the groundwork often in ways that aren't threatening to people. And so I hope that there's some groundwork being laid that allows others to kind of step in and start taking up some of it as well, because I see myself as seeding ideas and then hoping that they start like a dandelion just blowing into our system so that they get changed incrementally. And I find that a really important role.
I'd love to ask you just a couple questions about kind of just building off of that, kind of looking at it from the other direction, and a little bit about your relationship to the quote unquote art world, whatever that means to you. How do you see your work kind of resonating within whatever art world means to you, I should ask?
Yeah, I have no idea what the art world means to me. Although, if I'm really thinking about it, you know, for me, the art world is much more the social engagement world, the world of people trying to use art to expand and make space for things. The way I work is often taken as something other by everyone or claimed by different constituencies. So for me, I feel like I'm a person who's chosen this way of thinking about what they do, art, and does it. And then I've spent a very long time trying to figure out, well, where do I fit in these spaces? And, you know, really New Ink was a great space for me because it allowed me to see the technologist world as an art space, and a space that was really pretty welcoming to me, right? And got the ideas and got the practice, actually. I think that's more about it. Like, my practice seemed like art to them. Whereas when I'm working in the general, more general art kind of gallery academic scene, I'm not sure they see me as artists. And people have told me basically as much, right? Like, you do this thing that, you know, I kind of see it as, right? And then they say something. And so it becomes an interesting kind of point of friction for me, because again, it's like me always trying to find space, but being okay with not having space and being patient, and just knowing that art making, right, for me is important, and then finding a place for it to live and be shared, became almost secondary, and then it was found, right? Like, which is interesting, because it's kind of the idea of a moment. I always think of it as the moment when we're at a crossroads, and the moment and the work and the ideas all came to the crossroads at the same time. And that's what allows for something else to happen. But whether the work is considered art or not is always debatable. It's media. Like, sometimes it's media, sometimes it's narrative. I've been accused or given an award. Like, I was given an award for committing acts of journalism, which I just love. Like, what does that mean?
What does that mean, actually?
It's kind of about the idea of collecting oral histories, which is a documentation, which is kind of a form of, right? Which really gets back to the whole photography basis and being an observer. And then offering that up to the world in different ways, or different constituencies being able to see it fit into their realm. Because, like, you know, I hang out with the New Frontiers folks at Sundance, and that makes me a media person. It's just a super interesting space to be in. But I usually always come back to the idea that I'm an artist. And that's because it's an expansive title that allows for many things to happen. And I relish that.
Well, that's so fascinating. And I think, like, so many of the people that I've been talking to, like, for this project, have said in so many words, sometimes very differently, but have gotten back to this notion that of exactly what you're saying around, by calling yourself an artist, it actually allows for a more expansive practice than, and a more kind of expansive, like, circulation in the world. And also there's this point at which I think you're kind of implying this too, where at some point, you know, the kind of labels that people put on you are a little bit irrelevant, because you know that you're an artist, and that is kind of the driving force in so much of what you do. And I wonder, like, you know, what are the things that you see as being the bright spots right now?
Yeah, I think I see a lot of upside and positive potential. It all depends on our purview, but, you know, it's really interesting to be an artist and who's functioning in the media space, and to be involved in things where people are thinking about where and how media art lives again, or how these technological arts live and get woven back into the fabric of what art is and how it gets supported. Like, that's a plus. Like I think that's kind of exciting, really. Like, you know, I'm thinking about AI ecosystems, and as much as I'm thinking of them as kind of these big overarching crazy things, I also think of them as this amazing point of opportunity. It takes taking it up, and it takes being able to imagine yourself in the space of working with it. If you can get there, I think the potential is unlimited, whether we're talking the potential to make something that becomes commercially viable, or the potential to make something that becomes a broader supportive system for the support of people living now and beyond, right? So I'm excited by that. Like, I'm excited by what the technology might bring us. I always wonder if we as humans can get out of the way enough to let that happen. Like, both get out of the way and get in line and working with it to have that happen.
Well, I mean, that's so good to hear, for someone that's as intimately aware of what's happening, to hear you kind of remind me also, or just, you know, everyone, that there is the real positive potential in this. I think that's actually really important to hear sometimes. And I think it's very easy to either go full utopia or full dystopia on this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I try to go full protopia on it.
Until next time, thanks for joining me at Informer, and I hope that you'll join us again.